A brief commercial message before you see your video. Creating a so-called Palestinian state would be national suicide for Israel. First, there has never been a Palestinian people. The terms Palestine and Palestinian have no historic validity. Israel is surrounded by 22 hostile Arab Muslim countries with over 640 times the size of land than that of the tiny Jewish state. If the Jews surrender Judea and Samaria, Israel will be only 6 to 9 miles wide. If you agree that Israel must never retreat to such suicidal borders, then join the Jewish Task Force, JTF. You don't have to be Jewish to join. The link to join is below.
Shalom. Welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Nithman, and to elevating the souls of Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harab Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Robert Mittman. We have two subjects we want to discuss on this week's program. First, we want to discuss this week's Parashat HaShavua. Parashat HaShavua is the weekly Torah portion that we read, that we Jews have to read every week in synagogues. And this week's Torah portion is Parashat Korach, and we're going to be discussing what that means, the implications of that, because it's very relevant to today's news, and very relevant in every generation, but especially today. And the second subject we want to discuss, Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud government approving the building of 14,000 modern new homes for the Arab Muslim enemies of Israel in Qalqilya. In just one Arab town, they want to build 14,000 beautiful modern new homes, while freezing building for Jews throughout Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. The Jew-hating policies of this evil government in Israel that sick, self-hating Jews call a so-called right-wing government. This is a so-called right-wing government. Let's start off with Parashat HaShavua. Once again, the Parashah this week, the Torah portion, is Parashat Korach. Korach leads a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, against Moses, the greatest Jew who ever lived, greatest human being who ever lived. Korach leads a rebellion against Moshe, against Moses. And he has all types of excuses and reasons. He gives all types of supposed theological justifications for the rebellion. But the rebellion was really based upon the fact that he wanted power, and that the people that were behind him were also motivated by ego and the desire for power. They were opportunists, and they were willing to sacrifice the best interests of the Jewish people and the best interests of the world for their own personal ego and ambition and their own personal desires. But there's some interesting things in the argument between Korach and Moshe that we see in every generation, Moshe again being Moses. Moses was an idealist. He believed in following exactly what Hashem, what God, commanded the Jews to do. And he did that. And you know, he could have taken a very different path, the path that virtually all Jews in our generation and virtually all human beings in our generation would have taken. Moses was next in line to becoming Pharaoh, to becoming Paro, to becoming the ruler of Egypt. Egypt was the superpower, the last remaining world superpower at that time. Egypt was the empire that ruled over most of the civilized world, culturally, if not territorially. Egypt was sort of like the United States today, except perhaps even more dominant over the world than the United States is today. And Moses could have become Paro. He could have become the ruler of Egypt, the ruler of the mightiest, most powerful, most influential nation by far on the face of the earth. He could have become the new ruler of Egypt. And then he could have let the Hebrew slaves go. And then he could have done whatever he wanted as far as the Hebrew slaves. He could have put the Hebrew slaves in charge of Egypt if he wanted to. But he chose a very different path. He chose the path of fighting from the outside, of being a rebel. He chose the path of idealism because he knew that Egypt was a decadent, evil, immoral nation. And he knew that if he had become Pharaoh and if he had freed the slaves, let's say he had done that, he became Pharaoh and freed the slaves instead of the way he wound up doing it, the way we know about it, the way we know that historically he did it, with the 10 plagues and all the other things that happened. Instead of that, if he had just become Pharaoh, if he had been practical, like Korach, a pragmatist, practical, like B'nai B'rith in the UJA and AIPAC, and all the self-hating Judenrat capos of our generation, Bibi Netanyahu, Naftali Bennett, all the rulers in Israel, Avigdor Lieberman, Shas. Just be practical. Be practical. Be a pragmatist. Why are you so unrealistic? He could have pleased all the Jewish pragmatists and all the practical people in the news media and everybody else and just become Pharaoh. And then he would have been in control of everything in Egypt, and then he could have freed the slaves. But if he had done that, it wouldn't have been a miracle. It wouldn't have been anything magnificent. It certainly would not have been remembered historically as anything magnificent. And the Jews would have remained in Egypt, which was not their destiny. The destiny of the Jewish people was to be in the land of Israel. Every Jew is required to live in the land of Israel. The mitzvah of living in the land of Israel is equal to all the other mitzvot of the Torah. The rabbis, Chazal, teach us, he who lives outside of Israel is as if he has no God, and he who lives in the land of Israel is as if he has a God. We are taught that living outside the land of Israel is like Avodah Zarah, it's like idolatry. We are not allowed to live outside the land of Israel. Jews risked their lives, and many of them gave their lives to live in the land of Israel. And today, when you have a modern, booming, beautiful, magnificent Jewish state, flourishing Jewish state, there is no excuse. Every Jew belongs in Israel. And Moses understood that the land of Israel was the land that God had created as the holy land, the only place where the Jews could be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests, which is their destiny. It was the only place where God had created a fitting atmosphere to bring his message to the whole world. Egypt, on the other hand, was not that type of land at all. And so Moses was an idealist. He was an ideologue. He was someone with principles. He was like Rabbi Meir Kahana, and like all the great Jewish heroes of history who refused to compromise on their principles, who refused to give in. And so instead of becoming Paro, instead of becoming Pharaoh, Moses led a rebellion, a seemingly hopeless rebellion, of defenseless, unarmed slaves. Unarmed, defenseless slaves who had the ultimate slave mentality against the mightiest empire on the face of the earth. Against an empire where not a single slave had ever escaped from Egypt. No nation had ever rebelled against Egypt successfully at that time. No nation ever stood against Egypt successfully at that time. And here you have unarmed, pathetic slaves telling Paro and telling the Egyptian empire what to do in trying to defeat the Egyptian empire. So this seemingly hopeless battle, impossible, the impossible dream of Moses, the idealist, was based upon the fact that he understood that God rules the world, God decides the destiny of nations, and that God can humble Pharaoh. And people throughout history that have understood this, Jews who have understood this throughout history, have won spectacular victories, whether it's in ancient times involving Moses, or involving King David, or involving the Maccabees, or the story of Purim against Haman, who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. All the miracles, all the great victories, all the incredible things that have happened to the Jewish people in ancient times and in modern times. The War of Independence, the resurrection of a Jewish state after 2,000 years, the flourishing land of Israel returning to our land, which was a desolate wasteland, and now it is one of the most flush, beautiful, magnificent lands on the face of the earth. Returning to the land and winning when outnumbered 100-1 by their enemies, when the whole world is against them because their enemies have all the oil, their enemies have all the petrodollars, their enemies have the advantage that the world always hates the Jews, that most of the world is anti-Semitic, and that the Jews themselves are a self-hating people and have a ghetto mentality after 2,000 years of living in the exile. With all these disadvantages, this hopeless battle, this hopeless dream of the Jews comes true in 1948. And after 2,000 years, the Jews do return to their land and win wars in 6 days, Israel quadruples in size in just 6 days against the whole Arab world, outnumbered 100-1. This is something even Hollywood couldn't create. And this, someone who understands the destiny of the Jewish people knows that God controls the destiny of nations. And God controls what will be. And so Moses understood that. And Moses trusted and believed in God. And those who followed him trusted and believed in him. And they were a minority of the Jews. 80% of the Jews in Egypt didn't want to leave Egypt and refused to leave to the end. And they were killed in the plague of darkness. 80% of the Jews in Egypt, of the Hebrews in Egypt, were killed because they didn't want to leave, because they refused to leave. Only 20% did leave with Moses. And even that 20% was rebellious and impossible. And that's an interesting question. As long as we're speaking about it. Why did Hashem pick the Jewish people? The most stubborn, impossible, stiff-necked nation in the world. Nobody is more impossible than the Jews. As even that traitor David Ben-Gurion once said to Harry Truman, when he came to Harry Truman, to the White House to visit Harry Truman. Harry Truman calls him David, and Ben-Gurion calls him Mr. President. So he says, you can call me Harry. Harry Truman says, no, you can call me Harry. You don't have to call me Mr. President. He said, after all, we're both the leaders of our country, so it's the same situation. And Ben-Gurion said, it's not the same situation. You are the president of 150 million Americans. At that time, there were 150 million people in the United States. You're the president of 150 million Americans. I'm in a country with 1 million Jews. At that time, there were 1 million Jews in Israel when Ben-Gurion visited Truman. I'm not the prime minister of 1 million Jews. I am the prime minister of 1 million prime ministers. Everyone in Israel thinks he's a prime minister. Everyone in Israel has their opinions. And everyone wants to fight and argue two Jews, three opinions. Everybody always arguing and this and that. And on the one hand, but then again on the other hand, this is the Jewish mentality. They're impossible. Impossible. Why did God pick a people that is so stubborn and always skeptical and always cynical and always questioning authority and always rebelling against everybody? That's what the Jews are. Why didn't he pick a more passive, nice people from some third world countries? Where people, they'd accept them, or people who would automatically say, oh yes, we believe, and would believe anything he says. And you got people who worship rocks and worship trees, or worship human beings, or worship all types of things. I mean, you have people who will fall for anything. Why not pick one of those peoples who are gullible, who are willing to blindly follow with faith, blind faith, who don't question authority? Why pick the people that is the most rebellious, the most stubborn, the most impossible, the most kvetching? You know what kvetch means? To complain. It's a Yiddish word. Why pick the Jews? It was deliberately done that way. So that the world would see that even the most questioning, the most skeptical, the most impossible nation, after seeing these great miracles, would have to believe. And so it was deliberately done this way. So that we would know when it says in the Bible, when Moses says, remember God did all of these things in Egypt, and nobody in the Bible questions when Moses says that, because everybody remembers that it was done. Everybody remembers that those are the things that happened in Egypt. And so God deliberately picks the Jews to be the ones who are going to carry his message, who are going to be the light unto the nations and the holy nation, the nation of priests, the special nation that will bring God's message to the world. And the land of Israel is the land that he picks to fulfill this mission. Moses understands that. And Moses decides to be an idealist. He decides to fight for his principles. It reminds me of the battle that we had for Soviet Jewry with Rabbi Meir Kahana and the Jewish Defense League. And I remember when we were fighting that battle, how people said to us, you'll never get all the Soviet Jews out. Why don't you ask the Soviets? The Jewish establishment organizations were already compromising. They were saying to the Soviets, okay, you don't want to let out all 2 or 3 million Jews from the Soviet Union. Okay, give us 10,000 a year, 20,000 a year, 30,000 a year. give us at least something, 10, 20, 30,000 a year at least. You know, we'll compromise with you. And then we won't protest and we won't complain and everything will be fine. In the JEL with Rabbi Kahana, we refused to accept that. We said we want every single Jew to be freed and we want them to have the ability to leave whenever they want immediately. We want them to leave. We want every Jew freed. We would not compromise on a single Jewish soul and we would not leave a single Jew behind. Every Jew must have the right to leave immediately. That was our demand. And everybody said, it's so unrealistic. What's wrong with you? You'll never see that in your lifetime. That's something you'll never see in your lifetime. We didn't listen. And Rabbi Kahana didn't listen. Rabbi Kahana taught us not to listen. He taught us that if Jews are willing to sacrifice and fight for what's right, great things can happen. And we saw the downfall of the Soviet Union. We saw that all the Soviet Jews, all of a sudden, and Gorbachev announces that all the Soviet Jews that want to leave are allowed to leave. We had complete open borders and open immigration for the first time since the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. We were always told that was impossible, that could never happen, but it did happen. Just as those who wanted to create a Jewish state were always told, after 2,000 years you're going to create a Jewish state? What are you, crazy? You're going to go back to, you're going to take Jews in places like Poland and bring them back to the Middle East? And in the middle of the Middle East, you're going to create a state in a place which is a barren, desolate, malaria-ridden swampland, and internally is just a desert? What are you, crazy? All of these seemed like hopeless dreams, but all of them come true when Jews are willing to sacrifice and stand for what's right. You see, that was what Rabbi Kahana and Moses and great leaders throughout Jewish history wanted to teach the Jewish people. Every Jew and every Gentile, every human being, has a higher calling. Your purpose in life is not to watch football or basketball or baseball games and watch somebody throw a ball or hit a ball or throw a ball through a hoop. Your purpose in life is not to buy a fancy car or a fancy house or fancy clothes or to build up a bank account. Well, you're not going to take the money with you when you go to the next world. That's not your purpose in life. Your purpose in life is to make this a better world. Make it a better world than when you came into the world and do everything you're supposed to do. Now, not all of us can be a Moses and not all of us can be a Rabbi Kahana. Not all of us have that ability. We, the simple Jews, the simple people, and the simple Gentiles as well, we don't have the ability to be like Moses. We don't have the ability to do that. But God, on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, is not going to ask us, why weren't you like Moses? Chazal, the rabbis teach us. God's not going to ask you, why weren't you like Moses? God is going to ask us, why weren't you as you could have been? Why didn't you do everything you could have done? And he's not going to ask us if we succeeded or failed as much as did we do everything we could do? Because even when you supposedly fail, you're not really failing. For instance, if you have a prayer and the prayer is not answered, that prayer is not a waste. You never know. You never know when that prayer is going to be answered. Maybe after you leave this world, maybe in another generation, God is going to do something wonderful because of the fact that you said that prayer, because of the fact that you did a good deed, because of the fact that you gave to charity, because of the fact that you went to a demonstration or organized something or publicized the truth, because you took a stand, because you did something for righteousness. You never know when the consequences of your actions are going to bring great results in this world or in the next. But they will. But they will. And so, Moses was a trailblazer, because the real trailblazers of history are the rebels. The real trailblazers of history are the stubborn, impossible people who refuse to compromise, who refuse to bend, who are obstinate and stiff-necked. Those are the real trailblazers of history. Why do you think the Jews are so successful? Even the evil Jews are successful in what they do, because they still learn, they still have within them, they don't even know why they have the ability to succeed, but they have this ability to succeed because they learn these concepts. And that's why, I mean, you talk about Jewish influence. People say there's too much Jewish influence in the media and too much Jewish. Of course there's going to be massive Jewish influence. The Jews are a nation of geniuses. They've always been. In every generation, they've had, they vastly outperformed their numbers in every generation, always. Look at who, look at the, and even the evil ones. Facebook is controlled by self-hating Jews. YouTube is controlled by self-hating Jews, owned by Google. Google is controlled by self-hating Jews. I mean, and the Jews is like a speck. There are only 12 million Jews in the world. Out of 7.5 billion people, 12 million Jews. And it's unbelievable. So for good or for bad, whether it's for good or for bad, the Jews have tremendous power and influence over events. Because not being willing to accept defeat and continuing to try and continuing to fight and continuing to stand for the truth, that's the way we're supposed to go. That's the lesson of Moses. It's also the lesson of Rabbi Kahana and the lesson of all great Jews in history. That and the Jews who never became like a Moses or a Rabbi Kahana, never became famous, but they did what they could and in many cases gave their lives for things that they believed in, for what they believed in. Those are the people that change history in the real sense of the word. People that we never even heard of that also played that role historically. But you can be sure that they'll get the full credit for it in the real world. The world of truth, the real world, is God's world after we leave this world. Korach and those who rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu, against Moses, they're like the Jewish establishment of today, like the Israeli government of today. They're the pragmatists. The truth is the real practical, pragmatic route is the idealistic route. Can you imagine if the Jews became an idealistic people fighting for Jewish principles again? Can you imagine if the Jews did what God commands them to do in this generation? Can you imagine what type of world this would be? Now, the second subject we want to discuss on this week's program involves the evil Jews, like Korach, and like the Jews who run the current Israeli government. Bibi Netanyahu, who is an evil person, approved, and his cabinet approved, the building of 14,000 beautiful, modern, new homes with Jewish money and Jewish taxpayer dollars for Arab Muslim enemies of the Jewish people in Qalqilya. Qalqilya is a vicious hotbed of Islamic Nazi terrorist mass murder. Many Jews have been murdered by terrorists coming from Qalqilya. It is a vicious, evil, monstrous hotbed of Islamic terror. And Netanyahu wants to build another 14,000 homes for them. Isn't that nice of him? This is the same Netanyahu who promised the Jews in Beit El that he was going to build 300 homes for them when he destroyed their homes 5 years ago. And 5 years later, not one home has been built. This is the same Netanyahu who promised 7,000 new homes in Jerusalem when he ran for prime minister. And that was several years ago. Not one home has been built. This is the same Netanyahu who promised many thousands of housing units in other parts of Judea and Samaria. Never built that. And the price of housing is very high throughout Israel because of this building freeze. It's one of the major reasons why housing prices and real estate is so expensive in Israel that the average Israeli cannot afford to buy a home or an apartment. In Israel, you buy apartments. And you can't afford to buy a home or apartment. The average Israeli cannot afford to. Newly married couples, and in Israel, people do get married and do have children in Israel. It's not like the United States. I mean, I'm 60 years old. One-third of men my age in the United States are still bachelors. In Israel, you don't have that situation. In Israel, Jews do get married and do have children, and the Jews in Judea and Samaria, the heroic Jews of Judea and Samaria, which is the biblical heartland of Israel, those Jews have a higher birth rate than the Muslims. But anyway, Netanyahu is choking them by not allowing them to build any homes and vetoing the building of homes. The deputy mayor of Jerusalem and other people, even in Netanyahu's own Likud party, have said that Netanyahu has personally prevented the building of thousands and thousands of housing units. He goes all around, makes calls all around Israel, ordering people not to allow and not to approve the building of homes in Jerusalem or in Judea and Samaria, while the Arabs are building frantically all over the place. So the Arabs are winning on the ground. We have 100,000 Jews now, living in the areas which Netanyahu wants to retreat from to create a so-called Palestine state, which would be national suicide for Israel. There are 100,000 Jews living on the other side of the fence that Netanyahu is building, where Israel would be in borders that are only 10 miles wide, a complete national suicide. And only 100,000 Jews are living there now, which means there'd be only 100,000 Jews to resist or prevent such a retreat. If Netanyahu and other Likud prime ministers had not frozen building over the years, we could easily have had 1 million Jews living there now, and nobody would even be dreaming of giving up those lands. If there were 1 million Jews there now, if there were 1 million Jews there now instead of 100,000, there'd be no hope of creating a so-called Palestinian state, and this great danger would no longer exist for the Jewish people. This is the type of evil that we have in Israel today. It is a plague. We have the people, we have Korach and the evil people ruling over the Jewish people in every facet of Jewish life, all the Jewish organizations, all the Jewish establishment groups, the so-called Jewish lobby AIPAC, a bunch of traitors, a bunch of self-hating traitors, the Israeli government, the Israeli political parties. The only political party in Israel that I think is worth supporting is the Zehut party of Moshe Feiglin, and JTF has endorsed Moshe Feiglin. He's the only one worth supporting. We're going to fight this battle, and I have good news. I have good news as far as our views. I've been talking to you about our advertising campaign with our YouTube videos. I can tell you it's going up. It's going up exponentially. We're now getting, I don't know if this is going to continue, but I'm just saying, the past few days, something has happened where we're now getting about 25,000 views a week for all of our videos. 25,000 views a week. I mean, that is quite an impressive number in a country the size of Israel with only 6 million Jews. So we're reaching people with our message. We're reaching the Jews of Israel with our message. Help us. Give us the chance to reach more. Join with us. Yes, we say things that are unpopular many times. Yes, we're idealists. Yes, the instinct of a human being is always to think, oh, I gotta be practical, I gotta be pragmatic. Being practical and pragmatic means not compromising your principles, especially if you're a Jew, or if you're a Gentile who wants to support the Jewish people. Join with us. Let's fight together. Together, if we stand for idealism and stand for truth, we can make this a better world. We can change history. We can prove that those who stand for honesty and truth and justice and righteousness, they're the wise people. They're the true pragmatists. They're the true people who are practical in the world. We can prove that if we work together and fight together. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.